around the world. So it's with great pleasure that the award-winning Midnight Ravers proudly present Bob Marley, Rasta Revolution, a five-hour WBAI Music Marathon special, airing Friday, February 7, 2014, from 12 midnight to 5 a.m. So tell your loved ones, tune in, and show your support. Only on WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM.
The Midnight Ravers, where every show is a special.
Stand up for your rights.
And you're listening to WBAI New York. The time is 7 o'clock on a Wednesday night. Time once again for Off the Hook. Good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Mike.
Hello.
And Bernie S.
Greetings from Philadelphia.
And a special guest, the new program director, fairly new program director of WBAI, Bob Henley.
Welcome. Interim, please. We only make them interim so they don't get illusions of permanence.
Yeah, they've always been interim.
That's right. We like to keep insecurity throughout the workforce.
Well, hopefully the interim lasts a while so you can actually
maybe do the pledge drive.
Get
or
some
maybe
things.
Not.
Well, this is a pledge drive. That's,
yes, it is. That's, that is it.
That's the secret that we're sharing tonight.
That's the secret sauce, yes.
But it's a different kind of pledge drive.
It is. It, yes, that's right. It, because the programming is the premium. If you're listening now, mm-hmm. against all odds, yes, Arbitron is defined as 335,000 discrete listeners. So I guess if that's the case.
Discrete?
Discrete. Well,
that's the problem.
Separate and independent, exactly.
All right.
If I would imagine, if you're listening now, you've probably done what I have always done, which is tune in because these guys are great company. You learn stuff, it passes time. You find that if you listen here, I usually think it's the Off the Hook 6 month track where I've heard it here and then it's in the New York Times. Like, I feel so smart. Like, wait. There it is again.
Uh-huh.
And consistently over the years, I've noticed that you've identified the things that society gets all like, I can't believe this is true. I'm like, well, it's been around for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're probably one of those kinds of people that is ahead of the curve. Well, in order to keep this ahead of the curve collectively and communally, we have to pay for it. There's no magical thinking. We are fresh out of special tchotchkes. What we have are the individuals that for 54 years have been coming voluntarily to bring you programming they believe in.
Well, we haven't been doing the show for 54 years, but we feel like we have sometimes because so much has changed over the years.
That's right. We need you to call 212-209-2950. We have thank you gifts. We have all kinds of thank you gifts. There's all kinds of updated 2014 WBAI swag. But the bottom line here is it has to be the programming. That is the premium. Also, we've been, and you'll get a kick out of this, we've been doing something revolutionary, opening up the phones and letting hundreds of people who live in the area call in and interact spontaneously with crazy things like Mayor de Blasio saying it's a hazardous day to travel and then keeping the schools open. Like, someone should connect those things. Like, what should I do? Or observing that the same storm comes into the tri-state region, Governor Christie declares a state of emergency and tells non-essential workers to stay home. And here in New York City, it was business as usual. Now, we saw this Groundhog Day when Mayor Bloomberg told people in a similar storm, same thing happened. Governor Christie told people to stay home, avoid difficulties, and Mayor Bloomberg told people to go to Broadway shows.
See, well, Christie is very cautious, doesn't want to step on anybody's feet, so he's going to tell everybody just to stay home and leave
alone.
That's
right, in general. Yeah. Anyway, listen, I want you guys to have a great show. I'm going to come back a little bit later. 212-209-2950. It does matter. If you listen, you call in during this time, there is an association between the number of people that call in and the prowess of the program. I mean, I like to say it doesn't matter, but it does.
Uh-huh. And also people can go to the website, too.
Exactly. Exactly. And you have that, I guess it's give2wbai.
And two is the number two.
Exactly.
Yes.
I'm going to let you have a great program. I'll be back a little later.
Okay. We'll see you then. Bob Hanley, new program director, fairly new program director of WBAI, and we're seeing some changes. I think some positive changes as far as the tone, because we're not offering you magical solutions. We're not offering you anything that might seem a little too good to be true. What we are offering you is a program on a radio station where, actually, as Bob was saying, if you listen, in 6 months, you might actually hear it in the mainstream. So you are getting something that is magical in that sense. You're getting knowledge. You're getting education. You're getting information well ahead of its time. And I think that's something worth supporting, because without this place, without WBAI being here, we'd have the internet. Yeah, we'd be able to get the word out there, and you'd have to find us through all the noise. Whereas here, every Wednesday, 7 o'clock, you can tune in to 99.5 FM in New York City and listen to this program about technology, about hackers, about activism, about all kinds of interesting things. We've been doing it since 1988, and we'd like to continue with this radio station that happens to be here that allows programming like this. So show your support for that, 212-209-2950. If the program off the hook, matters to you, that is the best premium we can offer. It's a premium we've offered over the years. Sometimes we throw in extra gifts for different amounts, but this time WBAI is kind of rebooting, and we're going back to the basics, because if it's not about the programming, what is it about? It can't be about all kinds of products and things like that. It's got to be about what we broadcast over the radio, and I think Off the Hook listeners get that. Yes, Bernie, were you trying to say something?
No, I'm sorry. It was someone standing near me was talking, but I walked into a quieter room.
Well, did they have something to say as far as getting people to call?
Well, it was in Vietnamese, but probably that's exactly what they were saying, to call 212-209-2950.
In any language?
In any language, because I think there's some multilingual people at the phone bank, and this content is just not available anywhere else. So, you know, if you want to keep this kind of free and open free speech radio where listeners can call in and talk about the topics that are really only discussed on this show compared to any other radio station that I know of, you should call 212-209-2950.
I should point out that we are doing this. We're doing this kind of a fundraiser, a totally different style here at WBAI, in response to what listeners have asked for. They've asked for less hawking of items, less, promotional-sounding fundraising, and more getting back to what it's all about in the first place, which is what we're broadcasting over the radio. So, yeah, this is the time to make that count. And if people call in, 212-209-2950, and say, yes, I want to pledge however much for Off the Hook to keep that show on the air, then we know that that is what matters to people. It's the radio show. And that really is what it should be about in the first place when you call to support a radio station. It shouldn't be about getting a tote bag or a hat or something like that. It should be about keeping the show that you're listening to on the air. The more people who do that, the more we can do these kinds of fundraisers where it's not so in your face. It's more like you're investing in what you're listening to, and you're a part of the community. 212-209-2950. We have the BAI Buddy, which basically allows you to have an amount deducted from your bank account every month. I think it's as low as $5 a month, all different amounts. And that is an amazing way to pledge support, because it's painless. It just basically is something that happens automatically for a year, and it helps us tremendously. And it's basically the price of a cup of coffee a month, or all kinds of things that cost $5 or however much you you choose to support us with. 212-209-2950. Every call counts, and the better we do this hour, and we're not preempted once this whole fund drive. That's another thing. The better we do this hour, the more it means as far as keeping off the hook going and knowing that we have a strong listener base.
I don't want to spend too much time telling you how little time we're taking, but I would just say that this pledge format is a bit of an experiment for us. So your pledge now, 212-209-2950, is not only a vote in favor of keeping Off the Hook on the air, keeping WBAA on the air, but keeping us on the air throughout the pledge period and keeping our content on the air throughout the pledge period instead of spending, as sometimes we do, the whole hour on pledging.
Exactly,
so if,
yeah.
If that sounds good to you, give us a call.
And, you know, I can tell the brief moments we had Bob on the air, I think he understands that you keep an audience by being on every week, that there are things that you talk about on every single radio program, and I don't envy the job he has having to deal with every single radio program on this station. It's dozens, right? It must be. I never counted, but if you look at our schedule, just go to WBAI.org and you'll see how many programs there are, how many people there are. But every time that we are preempted because of the fund drive, it takes a while to get the audience back because people tune in on Wednesday. And if they tune in on Wednesday and we're not on, they might not tune in the next Wednesday. And the more that you disrupt the schedule, the harder it is for people to keep track of the schedule. So by having us on every week, fund drive or no fund drive, I think there's a consistency there that is particularly important to radio audiences. And you can help preserve that by investing in the radio station and saying to us that, yes, this is what you want. This is the kind of thing that you want. You know, a year ago, I would not have believed this was possible, that we'd be doing a fund drive like this. I thought we would have to keep coming up with more and more spectacular premiums, and it was turning into Home Shopping Network and really depressing a lot of people because it was very, very stressful. This is more laid back. We've cut our expenses tremendously, and this is the kind of fund drive that really matters to a radio station when people call in to support the radio. 212-209-2950. We have operators standing by. You can pledge for the WBAI buddies, or you can pledge any amount. You can use credit cards. You can go online and pledge that way as well. What's the website again? I keep forgetting the...
It's give2wbai.org, and if you like digits, you're in luck because you should use the number 2 for the 2 in give2wbai.org.
Or you can go to wbai.org, and there's a link there to that site as well.
So you like links? That's
yeah.
That's the way
links
to do
are,
it.
Links are good. Okay, so we're told not to spend too much time on this, too, which is another good thing. You know, we're not going to spend the whole hour, but that's only a good thing if people call. So if we find out later that nobody called or very, very few people called, well, guess what? We'll probably be back to something more aggressive, and we'd be preempted more because the emphasis would be on raising the money because this wouldn't work. This kind of fundraising we're doing right now would not work, and we'd have to go to something else. So this is an experiment, and you can help this experiment succeed by calling 212-209-2950. Yes, Bernie?
I didn't say anything, but
I know you want to
reemphasize that clearly if you're listening to this show right now, and I think a bunch of people are, and you want to keep listening to it, the only way to keep doing that is to support WBAI, which is, believe it or not, not wallowing in money and not wasting money at this point. They're very pared down to the bare bone pretty much now. And they have a modest little offices in Brooklyn, and we're sharing studios at a community college. And this station, none of us on this show get paid a dime. We invest our own money to be on this show, that sort of thing. If you want to support this type of free speech radio programming, talking about the topics that you really want to hear about, obviously if you're listening to us, you'd like to hear us talk about things in the hacker community and what's going on with digital rights, that sort of thing, please call 212-209-2950. Keep this kind of radio alive because BAI is kind of on the ropes. If it doesn't stay on much longer, if it doesn't keep getting support from listeners, this kind of programming won't exist in New York City.
That's right. We're one step away from being outside. And while we still have a roof over our heads, we will continue to broadcast, and you can help determine what the future will be. A lot of people predicted our demise well before now. A lot of people did think we would survive, but a lot of people thought that we would not make it to the end of last year because of all the dire predictions and doomsayers and things like that. But BAI has this spirit. It's hard to quantify, but it's something that is able to survive all kinds of disasters and mismanagement and everything you could throw at us. The only reason we survive is because of our listeners. If the listeners were not there, obviously we wouldn't be there either. So all we're asking is that you show that you're there and give a call, 212-209-2950. If you're listening on the internet later, i.e. downloading the show and listening another day or overnight, you can still call. You can still call. You can still go to the website. Just say that Off the Hook is the show that you are pledging for. And somebody somewhere will take note of that. And we will be somewhat secure in knowing that we have listeners out there. Bernie, why are you hitting touchstones?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't know you should have. I must have been my cheek pressed against the phone.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yes, people used to do on teleconferences to get attention. But
which touchstone digit was it you heard?
This is a test. It sounded like a 6 to me, all right?
Close.
You know what touchstone your face hit. How do you know that?
Well, it shows up on the display of my phone.
Oh.
I think it was a 1, but...
Well,
anyway,
then it shouldn't be hard for you to tell if you look at your phone and it'll tell you what.
Well, I was just testing you. Some of our listeners, I'll bet you some of our missed listeners are sharp enough to pick that up.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll get mail about that, tell you something about what the priorities are in this particular community. Okay, and of course you can write to us, oth@2600.com, with any comments, any thoughts that you might have. As well, about the show, about the station, about life in general. We're going to get into the actual program now, where we talk about what's been going on in the world. A lot has been going on, but one more time, we must implore. We are serious. This is important. This is vital. This is crucial. Without you, we are nothing. Give a call, 212-209-2950, and either pledge one lump sum or support the radio station through the WBAI Buddy system. There are people there who can help you in all sorts of ways, answer all sorts of questions that you might have. And you can also go to the website, give2, WBAI.org, and pledge that way. But we implore you to please do that now. All right, so we have the Olympics coming up this week, and boy, what a lot of fun that's going to be. There was a story posted. I saw this in the Weekly Standard, but I think it's making the rounds throughout all kinds of news agencies. This story emanated from NBC, and this is an example, folks. This is an example of the media saying absolutely nothing and taking a lot of time to say it. Something that we're not that good at here. We usually inadvertently say something. Richard Engel reported last night on NBC that all visitors to the Sochi Olympics are getting hacked as soon as their electronic devices connect to any Russian network. That's right, folks. You heard it here, or you probably heard it there, too, if you were watching NBC. All visitors are getting hacked as soon as their electronic devices connect to any Russian network. As tourists and families of athletes arrive in Sochi, if they haven't been warned, and if they fire up their phones at baggage claim, it's probably too late to save the integrity of their electronics and everything inside them. Visitors to Russia can expect to be hacked. And as Richard Engel found out upon his arrival there, it's not a matter of if, but when. That was Brian Williams saying that in dramatic tones. And then the report went, I'm just reenacting the whole thing here.
Wait, they haven't even said anything yet.
No,
they've already contradicted themselves. They said it's not a matter of if, but when. But just before that, they gave you the one they said instantly. It can't be both instantly and a question as to when it will happen.
Well, no, it's not a question of if. There is no if anymore, right?
Right, but then they said it's
only
a question of
only
when.
Only when. Yeah.
It's a question of when, but before, a few paragraphs ago, they gave you the answer to when.
There's only two paragraphs so far. All right, well, we can critique the rest of that later, but let's let Richard Engel give his report now. Richard Engel says... I can't do his voice. I don't know what his voice sounds like. The State Department warns that travelers should have no expectation of privacy. Well, that makes it easy, doesn't it? if you have no expectation of privacy, then you won't be disappointed. Even in their hotel rooms, That's an actual sentence that Richard, for shame, Richard Engel. That's not a sentence, even in their hotel rooms. Okay.
There, maybe when he said it aloud, there was an M dash or something instead of a period.
Well, there's no M dash here, and it disappoints me.
It could be the transcriber.
All right, let's try to get through this. And as we found out, starting a sentence with and, I'm just going to turn off my grammatical critique here.
This is a lot of prescriptivism.
Yeah. As we found out, you are especially exposed as soon as you try and communicate with anything. One of the first things visitors to Russia will do is log on. Hackers here are counting on it. Oh, boy. They test the system in the report. This is now back to the actual news report here. They test the system in the report and are, as one might expect, immediately hacked the moment the test computer connects with the Russian network. I'm not exactly sure how you know you're immediately hacked, but they claim that that's what happens. Malicious software hijacked our phone before we even finished our coffee. Stealing my information and giving hackers the option to tap and record my phone calls. Wow. Bernie, have you ever heard of such a thing?
It's pretty amazing. I don't think this reporter really knew what they were talking about when he wrote this story.
Yeah, and the time that you said that, my phone has been hacked twice by hackers. And apparently, yes, they have the capability now to video record me and to record my phone calls and my thoughts. Wow. Because they have to announce how they've hacked you. That's how you know.
I mean, it's probably true that there are some security concerns, some electronic security questions for visitors to Russia. There are also many electronic security concerns for visitors to countries like the United States, that are known to spy on their residents. But this story seems awfully poorly reported.
I don't think it's reported at all. They don't give any information as to what exactly it is they're learning. What is it that tells them your phone has just been hacked? You're seeing some ads, maybe? That could be a service that you already subscribed to.
Haven't you ever seen the movies? There's like a giant flashing dialogue that says you've been hacked.
I've seen those movies, and I thought that was fiction. And this apparently is the reality that these people are living. I almost feel like going to Sochi now just to see what they're talking about, to turn on my phone and see what happens. Now, there's nothing in there that says, this is what you can do to prevent this. This is the security, the basic security you can have to keep your phone data secure. It's just basically, there's no defense. Hackers are going to get you no matter what. And that kind of attitude, that kind of negativity and basically demonizing hackers all over the planet, That really is very destructive in so many ways.
I mean, I will say it does seem very reasonable to believe that the Russian state is able to listen in on your phone calls made in Russia, just the same way that the United States government listens to your phone calls made in the United States. So, but that doesn't require anything to do with your actual device. So it's not clear what additional capabilities they're claiming.
And, you know, at least when the Americans do it, they don't announce it. They do it secretly. You know, it takes someone like Edward Snowden to come and say, hey, look what they're doing. But when Americans hack your phone, it's quietly and surreptitiously, and you find out about it years later.
But we don't have the giant flashing dialogue technology, I guess.
Apparently not. Wow. Okay, so then there's this other story about GCHQ, which is the British intelligence organization. They disrupted hacktivist communications by using the techniques of the hacktivists against them. That's according to more Edward Snowden leaks. Documents from the whistleblower, again published by NBC, someone's been reading NBC lately, indicates UK cyber spies used a denial-of-service attack in 2011 to force a chat room used by the anonymous collective offline. These are the tactics they use, a simple denial-of-service attack. I don't know, Bernie. You've been talking about this on our list. What do you think of this whole thing?
Well, actually, Glenn Greenwald actually contributed to the story for NBC, and he's one of the people that has been reading the documents that Ed Snowden gave him about this. And it looks like GCHQ, which is Britain's equivalent to the NSA, part of the UK-USA alliance, also known as the Five Eyes alliance, has apparently been committing felonies against Americans who actually, many of whom weren't even committing any crimes. They were just discussing things in an IRC chat room, and the GCHQ decided to do the childish thing of launching a denial-of-service attack, a thin flood attack. That technique's been around for, what, 20 years now, almost, to stop that communication. I just think that if federal prosecutors in the U.S. wanted to prosecute this sort of thing, they would charge those people with conspiracy to violate the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act. But because these GCHQ guys were part of the Good Old Boys Network, they're going to do this with impunity. These weren't foreign. These were people. These were teenagers, most of them, it seems like, according to the story, who were discussing things that was not illegal, and yet their communications were disrupted by a foreign entity in league with the United States.
Well, so every time I've been on IRC, somebody disrupts the conversation somehow.
True.
Whether it be NIC flooding, SIN flooding, you name it. You're saying that kind of behavior is a felony?
It certainly is. It's considered interfering with a protected computer. All computers are protected computers under U.S. federal statutes.
All computers are protected computers. There are no unprotected computers.
If you look at the verbiage of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act, Title 18, Section 1030, uh-huh. You will see that this was a felony, what they did. Of course, they did it in Britain, but they did it against servers that were ostensibly in the U.S., against people who were apparently not breaking any laws in the U.S. And, I'm just saying that if the feds in the U.S., the federal prosecutors and the Department of Justice, wanted to go after Americans doing this, they would charge them with multiple felonies.
Right, but these are members of an intelligence organization overseas. You don't really think that anybody in the government here is going to want to charge somebody on our side in an intelligence organization with a crime?
Of course not, and you can't really believe that this was done without the at least passive approval of the U.S. government as well, because UK and USA, it's this whole UK USA alliance has been around for decades, and they've been doing each other's dirty work in communication circles. To scratch each other's back and do things that would be illegal within the borders of the individual country.
So there's another thing about this that I don't understand, and generally I don't understand how the intelligence agencies work, so it's maybe not surprising. But if the intelligence agencies believe, rightly or wrongly, that there are people here communicating and that the communications are going to further some sort of crime or threat to the national security or whatever these nutcases in power believe, wouldn't they want to know where that communication was taking place and, mm-hmm. and continue so that they could continue to watch it rather than disrupt it? The strategy doesn't even make sense from a purely tactical standpoint.
Yeah, it's kind of, it seems kind of defeatist if they are spying on these people to disrupt the communication so they can't plan anything and get themselves trapped. According to this story, in addition to Anonymous, the documents list LulzSec, the A-Team, and the Syrian Cyber Army as hacktivist groups that GCHQ was concerned about. In one case, it appears simply warning activists that carrying out their own denial-of-service attacks was illegal had the desired effect. So apparently just issuing that warning was enough to dissuade them from going further. NBC reports that the notice was posted via Facebook, Twitter, email, Instant Messenger, and Skype. I didn't get that notice.
How do you post
via
Skype?
I don't know.
Skype?
Well, this is NBC again. Don't forget. They have a Delta perspective on how these things work.
I thought Greenwald worked on this story, though.
I don't know if he worked on this particular story. There's only so much he can do. One alleged GCHQ document states that 1 month later, 80% of those contacted had stopped using a hacktivist chat room. Was it some kind of a survey? Hey, we're calling you 1 month after we warned you to see if you're still using a hacktivist chat room. I just wonder how they get this information. But basically, the documents indicate that GCHQ was willing to use denial of service attacks itself as part of an operation codenamed Rolling Thunder, which prevented hacktivists from using a chat room for 30 hours in September of 2011. Now, this is what I don't understand. It doesn't make sense to me. If you're prevented from using a chat room, you use another chat room. You're not dependent on one particular computer, location, connection, anything. If you have a group of people in this day and age, you have alternate ways of reaching them. Or am I being too idealistic here?
I mean, you could maybe interrupt the particular conversation. Newcomers might not know where the regulars go after hours, but yeah, it seems very poorly thought out. And of course, the irony has been pointed out that some of the people whose communications were disrupted have been charged with doing things like committing denial of service attacks. So it's okay for one side to do it, but not the other. But I just don't get it, as I said, from a just purely tactical standpoint.
And I always just take the position that denial of service attacks are stupid, no matter who's conducting them, because it just basically shuts out the opposition, doesn't allow them to speak. It's bad when the good guys do it. It's bad when the bad guys do it. It's bad when the good guys do it because you want the bad guys to be able to speak. You want them to hang themselves with their own words. And it's certainly bad when the bad guys do it because then, obviously, the good guys can't communicate. Although I really doubt that there's no other way for them to communicate. It seems way too simple, way too Hollywood. There's more that we need to find out about this story, obviously.
But it's Rolling Thunder.
It is Rolling Thunder, yeah. You know, why don't we come up with code names for things? We meaning everybody else. But I think, well, I mean, Anonymous did do that. They came up with, was the Scientology code name they had?
I don't think so many.
I think it was after the big guy. Start with a Z.
You see, if we had names like Rolling Thunder, it'd be a lot easier.
There was the Chanology.
That's what I was thinking of. Yeah, that was Scientology, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's 4chan, I guess, opposing Scientology. I think.
Yeah, but that's just a website. That's a group of people.
Well,
that's
the other amazing thing about all these news articles is that they pretend like Anonymous has some like worldwide headquarters that they can go invade, which of course is totally untrue.
Yeah, I know. You know what might make sense? You know how they have a listing of all the hurricane names coming up for every year? It's basically decided on in advance. What if we come up with a list of names of operations that groups like Anonymous, LulzSec, whatever, are going to come up with, and as that happens, the next name is assigned to that particular operation. That way there's no confusion.
So you want a centralized naming authority?
I think that, you know, why not? That's one thing I think could be centralized.
I can come up with some reasons why not, but I don't want to waste our listeners' precious time.
Okay, that's another list you can come up with then, but it's just a suggestion, and this is the place where we air suggestions. Another suggestion is that Edward Snowden get the Nobel Peace Prize. Two Norwegian politicians have suggested this. By nominating him, socialist Bard Vegar Solhjell and Snorre Valen said they do not condone all Snowden's disclosures. They acknowledge he may have damaged the national security of several countries, but they said they are convinced that his whistleblowing sparked a public debate and changes in policy. They say those changes have contributed to a more stable and peaceful world order. The United States, of course, wants to put Snowden on trial for alleged espionage and stealing secret documents. Russian President Vladimir Putin has granted Snowden a year's asylum, although I understand that's now been extended.
So I've heard, yeah.
All right. I heard it from Snowden. I didn't hear it from Putin.
Well, Putin's very busy running in Olympics. So.
Yeah. Do you think Snowden's going to go to the Olympics? Will he be a guest of honor?
I think he's going to stay far away.
Yeah, he's smart.
I mean, it's important to note that lots of people get nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize, and I don't think, you know, in recent years, the prize committee has really had the chutzpah to award it to someone like Snowden, but maybe I'm wrong, and he'll get it this year. Who knows?
All right. On to our stupid section. Well, some of this has been stupid already, but here's really stupid. Footage has been released of editors at the Guardian newspaper destroying computers that were used to store top-secret documents leaked by Edward Snowden. Under the watchful gaze of two technicians from, yes, GCHQ, the journalists took angle grinders and drills to the internal components, rendering them useless and the information on them obliterated. The bizarre episode in the basement of the Guardian's London headquarters was the climax of Downing Street's fraught interactions with the Guardian in the wake of Snowden's leak, the biggest in the history of Western intelligence. And yes, you can go online and actually see a video of them destroying the hardware. I don't know if the people destroying the hardware knew how stupid that was.
Well, the people destroying it were Guardian employees who almost certainly knew.
Okay.
And there is some evidence to suggest that even the GCHQ knew how stupid it was, but they did it anyway.
Well, what I don't understand is why did they tape it? If they knew how stupid they were going to wind up looking in the end, why show the entire world just how precisely stupid that really was? And the reason we say it's stupid, it's not very hard to figure out, but when you have computer data that has been leaked onto a computer, destroying the computer isn't the way to get rid of the data, because data can be... What, Bernie?
Copy.
Very good, yes.
And it was in other... We already knew, GCHQ already knew that this information, and the British Prime Minister and the government there already knew the copies of these files already existed elsewhere in the world. But, you know, this was a symbolic thing. But it's really silly watching... It's funny watching this silly video, which I think was actually done by The Guardian.
But it's... What is it symbolic of, other than stupidity? And it's not really symbolic. It's pretty direct as to what that... Who are they trying to convince by showing these computers being destroyed that they've done anything?
I think it's just amounted to... I hope I can say this in the air. Just a pissing match between the GCHQ and the owners of The Guardian saying, oh, we'll show you guys and embarrass you, but I think the only ones that got embarrassed were the folks at GCHQ that prompted this silly exercise to destroy the computers.
There's a lot I don't understand that's going on with this story, with the Snowden releases, the way governments are reacting, the way it's being addressed. This is one of the dumbest things I think I have ever seen. And literally, by watching that video, I just cannot believe what I'm watching. Actual hard drives being destroyed. For what purpose? Yeah. All right. Meanwhile, our friends over at the Chaos Computer Club have filed a criminal complaint against the German government. Another example of how Germans get things done. Why aren't we doing this?
They haven't won yet. They've just filed a complaint.
Okay. Have we filed a complaint?
I don't think you can. Private people file criminal complaints in the United States?
See, that's what I mean. That's what I mean. They can do things like that over there. If Off the Hook can march down to Federal Plaza or whatever and file a lawsuit, I'm willing to do that.
All right.
Yeah.
If we have any freelance prosecutors amongst our audience, write us an email, oth@2600.com.
Yeah, and not one of these, like, long legal battles with thousands of pages that actually go nowhere. No, it's something that actually makes a lot of sense, you know? Okay, this is what they're doing. On Monday, this Monday, the Chaos Computer Club and the International League for Human Rights filed a criminal complaint with the Federal Prosecutor General's office. The complaint is directed against the German federal government, the presidents of the German secret services, namely Bundesnachrichtendienst, you know what, it keeps going. I'm sorry, what?
BND, Bundesnachrichtendienst, maybe, but the, you the got federal, most, federal Intelligence Service.
You missed two syllables, but it's close enough. Yeah, and a bunch of other German entities there. Wow, there's a lot of them. We accuse U.S., British, and German secret agents, their supervisors, the German Minister of the Interior, as well as the German Chancellor, of illegal and prohibited covert intelligence activities, of aiding and abetting of those activities, of violation of the right to privacy and obstruction of justice in office by bearing and cooperating with the electronic surveillance of German citizens by NSA and GCHQ. And I'm told with that reference, we have now said GCHQ more than we have ever said it before on a show.
It's good to keep count.
Yeah, this is the GCHQ show, folks.
But this is about the German government's cooperation with the English-speaking intelligence agencies. So
it's interesting that they're charging the chancellor, because the chancellor is also a target of the NSA. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, well, I mean, she had a phone call with Obama, and he promised not to spy on her anymore, and Maybe he won't, but the German government has certainly been a beneficiary of many of the Anglophone spying programs, so I don't think it's unfair to accuse them of this.
It is the understanding of the CCC that these crimes are felonies pursuant to German federal law, specifically. Okay, well, the law basically says illegal activity as a foreign spy, violation of privacy, and obstruction of justice. The quote reads, every citizen is affected by the massive surveillance of their private communications. Our laws protect us and threatens those responsible for each surveillance with punishment. Therefore, an investigation by the Federal Prosecutor General is necessary and mandatory by law, and a matter of course. It is unfortunate that those responsible and the circumstances of their crimes have not been investigated. That's according to the attorney, Julius Mettenzwey, and also a longtime member of the CCC. So, good for them. Good for them doing this. We're going to be following this case. We need more entities to be taking this matter up. Bernie, you think they have any chance?
No, but I think it's good publicity. I guess people talking about these issues. I'm a believer in this kind of entertainment. That the more efforts people take to hold governments accountable, the less likely this stuff is to go under the rug and under the radar. People need to know what's going on, and this is another way to keep people aware of what's going on.
Absolutely, and we, of course, do encourage that kind of thing wherever possible. Even if they don't have much of a chance of succeeding, it does inspire people to fight back in one way or another. Okay, Rob T. Firefly is not here tonight, but he did discover something interesting from Canada. This is something off of a governmental agency, the Communication Security Establishment Commissioner. The commissioner's mandate includes undertaking any investigation deemed to be necessary in response to a complaint in order to determine whether Communication Security Establishment Canada has engaged or is engaging in unlawful activity. Blah, blah, blah. They go on. But basically, what the interesting thing about this is that the address to write to in Ottawa for the Communication Security Establishment Commissioner is P.O. Box 1984.
This is part of CSEC?
This is part of what?
CSEC?
Communication Security Establishment Commissioner.
That's, I don't know if that's the same CSEC
well,
or a different
it
one.
It spells CSEC, so whatever CSEC
all
is.
Right.
Yeah,
Which is the Canadian Intelligence Service.
Actually, yeah. Okay, replace Commissioner with Canada, and then you have another CSEC. Communication Security Establishment Canada.
Is this the commissioner? Is there? I don't understand these acronyms.
The commissioner's PO box is 1984, and then it's Station B on top of that, whatever that means. But yeah, it's just a humorous type of a thing. And but the question is, did they do this intentionally?
If it's 4-digit PO boxes, they had a 1 in 10,000 chance of it being 1984, that Orwellian number. I think somebody there at CSEC, the Canadian equivalent of the NSA, has an ironic sense of humor.
Or somebody in the post office has a wicked sense of humor.
Why do you think the Canadian Postal Service is being defunded?
Oh, you're right. You know, they're not going to be delivering mail to people's homes anymore in Canada.
Right.
Wow.
Probably punishment for giving this P.O. box.
Well, I don't think they really want to do that. That might be a good way to save a lot of stress. But, yeah, that's kind of crazy that they're not going to be delivering to homes anymore, just to communal post office boxes. All right, here's another story out of Norway, which is kind of strange. I'm wondering what the big revelation here is. Every student has their own access card to make use of everything from the school's library to the toilets. This is at Bergen University. When the students swipe their card, person, time, place, it all gets registered and saved for 90 days. This is all according to the Bergens Tidende, a newspaper up there. With this system, the university can track all the students' movements. The tracking was first used to prevent drug addicts' access to the school's facilities. I'm not sure if the drug addicts have cards.
Yeah.
How do you know if they're entering if they don't have cards? The school themselves say that students are informed about the registration of movements, but several students feel that they have been deceived. Now they demand an apology from the university administration. I don't get what the story is here. They're upset that their movements are being tracked. If you have an ID card that tracks your movements when you walk in, it registers when you enter a particular building or room. Where is the surprise in realizing that, wow, they're keeping track of this information? What am I missing here?
I don't know where the surprise is, but I think it's good that people are trying to fight a bit back against this.
Well, the way to fight back is not to accept the system in the first place. If you accept a system where you have to show a card to get into a particular place, obviously your locations are being tracked. Did they really not know this?
Once they realize it, they try and stop it. I think that's to be commended.
Fine, but I think we're missing the point here, that when you hand out location tracking cards to people, that's the time to object, not after you use it and then realize, oh my God, they're tracing my movements. You know, what do you think those cards are doing?
I think that there are many university students throughout the United States and the English-speaking world who have similar systems in their colleges, and if they all tomorrow decide to start opposing them, I think that would be cool.
That would be great. Would have been great a few years ago.
Would have been, but it didn't happen, so now's the time, folks.
Okay. I don't know what took so long and what the big surprise is here.
Follow the Norwegian example.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay. Well, maybe get ahead of the Norwegian example by realizing it a few years in advance.
You'd need a time machine for that.
Yeah. Okay, talking about the future, more things that are happening involving cars. And this is another thing that I'm surprised people are surprised at. But cars are going to be talking to each other as they drive around. A radio beacon is, and this is obviously where we are heading, and I think it might be actually a good thing, privacy issues notwithstanding. Radio beacon will continually transmit a vehicle's position, heading, speed, all kinds of other information. All kinds of cars will be receiving the same information back from all kinds of other vehicles, and a vehicle's computer will alert the driver to an impending collision. Some systems may automatically brake to avoid an accident if manufacturers choose to include that option. There is also talk of giving these kinds of tracking signals to bicyclists, pedestrians, all kinds of other, maybe even dogs on the street. So what we're going to wind up with are basically people that are being monitored at all times where they are in relation to other people and other vehicles for our safety. And maybe that's a good thing.
It's always for our safety, right?
Yeah. In this particular case, they say it'll cut down on automobile accidents 80%. I'm not sure how they know exactly how much, but it's hard to argue against it, even though I know there are plenty of good arguments against it.
So this sounds super useful to me. So if I can get one of these beacons and just, like, plant it permanently in the middle of the street, then cars who try and come down that street will be automatically stopped, and it will be safe for humans. I want to buy, like, thousands of these and just put them all over the place.
Well, it might have the opposite effect, where nobody believes them anymore and cars are just...
But if the car is auto-stopping when it sees the beacon, as is possible, according to this news article,
but you realize the car would never move again because it's waiting for the beacon to cross, and it's not crossing if it's attached to the street.
A car that is sitting in one place is totally not a threat to my safety.
Yeah, but it's... Well, you know what? I'm not going to have this silly discussion, but basically they are talking about giving this to pedestrians, bicyclists, motorcyclists. Drivers will be alerted to a possible collision with a pedestrian carrying a smartphone. Yes, that's all you need is your smartphone. That continually sends out information to cars in the vicinity, even if it's too dark to see the person or if the pedestrian darts suddenly into traffic. So... I see this moving in the direction of, well, yeah, you got run over because you weren't carrying a smartphone. You didn't have the software installed. It's your own damn fault. I don't know. it's basically, yeah, it's using the threat of violent death to get you to buy into a particular program. And it might do some, it certainly will do some good if it prevents accidents, but we are also giving up something else. What do you think, Bernie?
I like Mike's idea. I think that's great. To set up little safe zones where we don't want vehicles to be running over pedestrians by having these beacon transmitters. I'm looking forward to reverse engineering one of these beacons. I actually obtained a LoJack device once for that same purpose. It was pretty interesting. But this is worth checking out. Good idea, Mike.
Okay. We have some mail from our listeners, and you can write to us, oth@2600.com. Dear Off the Hook, just throwing in a little info about employers being able to access smartphone data and delete/reset the phone, as we discussed last week. My employer, a nonprofit arts organization, uses Microsoft Exchange for email. When I tried to set up my Android device to access my work email, I got a permission request to allow the mail app to reset my device to factory settings. That request was enough for me to decide that I really didn't need to access my work email from my phone, but I can see how easy it would be for most people to just hit OK without really checking what they were agreeing to. My employer gives a lot of trust and respect to myself and my colleagues, and I don't believe that they would actually use this option, and yet it's still required for me to access my work email from my personal device. It's interesting also that there is no additional software required for them to gain this control. The mail app that ships on the phone has this capability. Thank you, Illuminata, for writing in. It also says, incidentally, per the David Kennedy interview, I'm also a transplant to Louisville. Haven't been to DerbyCon yet, but I'll definitely be there this fall. Hopefully some of us will be there. So there's a possibility of that, definitely. And also this letter from John. I was listening to last night's show on the train this morning. People listen to us in all kinds of interesting places. We got mail from somebody listening to us on a crowded train in London, and people as they're waiting for their planes to take off. This is the magic of the Internet. Write to us. Let us know what interesting places you're listening to Off the Hook at, what days, what locations. We want to know. Anyway, I have one word to say to Emmanuel. Waze. W-A-Z-E. Google bought it recently. What didn't they buy recently? It handles traffic very well and automatically reroutes you if there's a backup in front of you. All users can also social report accidents, cops running speed traps, etc. It's really designed for commuting. For long-distance driving, I use regular Google, but for anything in a city, I use Waze. Thanks, John, for that. You know what? I actually installed this and used Waze to get here tonight, and it worked. It worked pretty well. I mean, there wasn't really any traffic because everybody was scared to go out in the ice, but it was interesting. Of course, it did route me in a weird way when I was initially starting. It made me go around the street I would normally go down, which just added time. I don't know what that was all about, but it did warn me that, hey, there's cops up ahead. And there were cops up ahead because somebody else, another Waze user, had weighed in and said, yes, there's a cop up here, be careful. I actually used the system to warn people that the Bruckner Expressway is a disaster zone in the Bronx because there are craters in the middle of the road. The thing is, though, to do this requires you to take your mind off what you're doing to issue these warnings and things like that. I still have issues with my Bluetooth where I can't get the thing to actually speak. If the Bluetooth is enabled in my car, then the speaker on the phone doesn't work and the Bluetooth doesn't work, so I have to keep looking at the screen, which is silly and against the whole purpose of having a GPS unit in the first place. So, it's good. It's better than what I used last week. It's nice. If you turn off Bluetooth in your car, then it'll actually speak through the speaker, but it's hard to hear because it's going through your phone and you're driving at the same time. I'm going to try and activate it now.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So this sounds like doubly dangerous to me because...
It is.
Because the people... Well, I mean, in addition to the danger you just described, the people are speeding, so they're going faster than the road engineers think is safe. And then, on top of that, they're not looking at the road because they're telling their phone that they might get in trouble for breaking the law.
In all fairness, I think it might be possible to speak commands to this rather than have to type it like I'm doing, which is not the way you're supposed to use a system like this.
But they're still distracted. They're still thinking about something other than where they're going.
You don't think people should think about anything other than where they're going when they drive?
I think it's very hard for humans to focus on interacting with a computer and driving at the same time.
Emmanuel?
Wow. Yes, Bernie?
Do we want to start talking to people about supporting WBAI before we end the show?
Yes, we do. We do. But we also want to talk about how to get to the NSA, which I just basically gave. I asked my phone now. It's calculating a route to the NSA right now, and it's not finding one.
I bet if you call 212-209-2950, the NSA will listen to your call.
Wow, see how long this is taking. This is if this was an emergency, I would have to set out on my own and not depend on routing server timeout. Okay. We continue our tradition of technology not working properly. But, you know, Waze is a good system. I like to play with this some more. I like to get my Bluetooth working because it doesn't work the way I like it to. But that's my problem, not yours. Well, yes, as Bernie said, we do want people to call in. This is a fundraising edition of the program, and we hope that our listeners have called so far to support the radio show so we can continue doing radio programs like this. Our program director has returned.
Interim, please.
Interim program director
there
has returned.
That's right. I can't help but to wonder if self-service, we do find here in Harlem Heights, it's a problem. And maybe it has to do with where we are in CUNY because of the structure, subsurface, surrounded by cinder block.
Mm-hmm.
But we are doing our best to mark, as we find anecdotally, places where we are connected to the great beyond, putting little yellow tapes so that we'll have our own little set of hot spots that will be informally shared with our colleagues.
Oh, that would be nice. Yes, absolutely.
212-209-2950. 212-209-2950.
What can people expect when they call that number?
Well, it was funny today she said because people had trouble getting to work. So there was at one point like a minute and a half delay because when mass transit and takes a hit like it did today, people have trouble getting to work and the relief doesn't show up, as we know. But you know that these guys show up and they've been doing it for how many years now?
Well, we started in 1988. Well, at least I started in 1988. And we've had all kinds of different people coming through the doors since then.
Right. That's incredible. That is a commitment to bringing you news and information, particularly as it involves technology. And one of the things that's happened is that the media is so entirely in bed with technology manufacturers, planners, slicers, dicers, and manufacturers that you really can't figure out, well, where is the truth-telling? Where is the journalism? Where is the user ability to say, hey, you know what? This doesn't work so well. Or this works really well. It scares me. There's really, it's so much bought and paid for at this point. I mean, I think, what was the show that talked about the delivery of goods by drone? What, you guys, that was that ridiculous non-story that Amazon
was going to,
like, totally created this gadget thing.
Mike doesn't believe it's going to happen.
Well, whether it's not going to happen, but they co-opted the entire news cycle with it. It was the missed opportunity of, like, the 40 out of 120 nations the ILL tracks, where there are so many unemployed young men from 16 to 24, the countries are about to implode. You know, updates like that, news you could use. Like, let's figure out which countries aren't Americans able to go to anymore since the war on terrorism has proliferated terror. You know, I just like handy things like that, as opposed to looking for the drones that could bring me my packages. Really?
Well, there is actually another story that came out this week about ice fishermen in Minnesota that have been told they cannot use drones to get beer delivered to them. They apparently were using drones to have beer delivered to them out there on the lake.
On the ice.
And the FAA stepped in and said, no, you can't do that. You got to use your regular SUVs to get the beer to you. Which, you know, to me, that says, yeah, this is coming. This kind of thing is coming, where all kinds of things are going to be in the air. And I don't know.
Pizza by drones.
Don't laugh. It's going
to
happen.
I know. I think, though, that you do want to have the ability to critically engage technology, and this 50,000-watt transmitter gives us the ability to do that. 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. There's really no hidden agenda here. It's about volunteer community programmers committed to following subject matter for years and holding corporations accountable in a way that no one else does, not the paid media. Not the sponsored media. 212-209-2950.
And support Off the Hook by calling that number. You can sign up for the WBAI Buddy System and have the amount you choose taken out of your bank account once a month, which is, I think, the most painless way to do this and the most beneficial way for us as well. You can go to the website, give2wbai.org, 2 being the number 2, and pledge that way. And you will feel good. You will feel great after supporting this place.
212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, and hang in there. I know it's a tough job. I cannot imagine what you have to deal with on a day-to-day basis, but it's always good to see people who have that spirit. And I just accidentally reported a cop on the road right outside the radio station. This is what this program can do. You hit a button, and all of a sudden you've said that, yeah, there's a police presence. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to do that. So if anyone thinks that, well, actually, there probably is police presence anyway. There usually is.
The police helicopter over on top of me right now, actually.
That might have been me that did that, because I had your address and I reported. Yeah, we'll talk after the show. We are out of time. You can again write to us at oth@2600.com. That is our email address. We will be back next week with another fundraising edition, because February is the month of fundraising here at WBAI. The Personal Computer Show is up next, and they have all kinds of fun things planned. Till next week, Emmanuel for Off the Hook. Have a good night.
I'm Bob Henley, Interim Program Director at WBAI. I'm pleased to announce the return of our classic fund drive number, 212-209-2950. That's 212-209-2950. Over the years, WBAI has offered you, the listeners, membership to WBAI. You are our primary sponsors. You provide the bulk of the funding to keep the signal on the air. By calling 212-209-2950, you may ask the WBAI pledge representative what gifts are available with your pledge of support. Again, the number is 212-209-2950. Donate today and help keep this essential community broadcast institution on the air.